This Week in Radio Tech is supported by Telos Systems, the best way to hear from there, on the web at telos-systems.com, and by Violet Microphones, handcrafted in Latvia for generations, on the web at violetusa.com.
You know, I miss Kirk's hair already.
And now, our feature presentation.
I'll have to grab a picture of Kirk someplace and just take the hair off and send it over to Burke. And next time he's not with us, every now and then, he can just put it up on the screen.
All right, calm down. He says that to everyone.
This calls for immediate discussion.
What's up, Dad?
Yeah, all your days are belong to us.
From his palatial office of important business.
Or in a choice hotel in a distant land.
This is Kirk Harnack.
No, it's not about me. In fact, I'm not here this week. This week it's Tom Ray, Chris Tarr, and Chris Tobin with War Stories.
You're dialed in to This Week in Radio Tech.
Hello, and welcome to This Week in Radio Tech. My name's Tom Ray. I'm Vice President of Engineering at Buckley Broadcasting, WOR Radio in New York. Kirk Harnack is not with us tonight. And this is This Week in Radio Tech. We do this every week. We get together and we talk about various things going on in the broadcast industry, particularly radio. And tonight, we're going to get out our boxing gloves because Kirk sent us a note and said, you know, guys, it's time for War Stories and it's a free-for-all. So we're just going to have a free-for-all here and we're going to have a good time. But we're going to take a little travel around first. And is anybody who is from the New York area and who knows the north suburbs of New York knows that if you want to go out to the Midwest, unless you're going to drive, you first need to go to New York City and to the airport or over to the Amtrak station because there ain't no way to get there from here. So we'll start with Chris Tobin. Hey, Chris, how you been?
Hey, Tom. I'm doing well. I'm the broadcast technologist for the CBS Radio Group here in New York City. And this week, we're actually hosting the President of the United States for the UN General Council. So it's very busy. So if you hear any crazy sounds of sirens outside my window, that's why. Other than that, things are great. And yes, the airports are busy, and getting from here to there is probably the best way. The place to start is here.
I wouldn't doubt it. Boy, let me tell you, every morning this week, I don't think it's taken me under 2.5 hours to get to the office from the house. So Chris Tarr should consider himself lucky because he doesn't have that kind of commute. Do you, Chris?
Not at all, although, you know, I live in the place that you guys from the East Coast, you know, usually wave down to as you're flying to somewhere warmer, you know, over in California. I'm Chris Tarr, Director of Engineering for Intercom's radio stations in Milwaukee and Madison here in beautiful Wisconsin, land of cheese, beer, and the 2-0 Packers.
Yes.
Cheese and beer, that's a good thing. The 2-0 Packers, that's a good thing, too. Did you guys see, the Giants game last week? Oh, my God. It was awful.
It's a shame. Half.
Yeah, it is. And I'm going this week, so I'll be able to scream at Eli in person from the stands. So anyway, a couple of things before we get into some war stories and some free-for-all. Assume you guys saw the link that was going around to a video on YouTube of the tower climber who was going up that 1,700-foot tower without the climbing belt or climbing rope.
I just watched that this afternoon. Yeah. One of our production staffers asked me about tower climbing and what I knew about it. I was like, well, I've done some in my time, and it's a craft. It's a specialized work. Don't take it for granted. And why? And he showed me the video. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. He goes, is it really that small up there? I said, the camera is, it's a little larger than you think. You know, the tower light they thought was very small. He goes, how can you stand on that small thing they call a tower light? And trust me, that beacon is not small.
I love it. No, matter of fact, I've got one here at the house that we took off the towers at the old WR site before we collapsed them. And it stands. That thing has to stand almost 3 feet high. It's a pretty hefty light.
Well, you know what I found interesting with that video? I've done some tower climbing. We probably all have done some part. The free standing, or what they call it, the free rising, free climbing method that, you know, apparently OSHA is okay with. I don't know if I would be doing that at 600, 700, 1,700 feet. It didn't seem right, you know, the way he was going up the tower.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I had actually heard that when they originally posted that video, they took it down because the way they were free climbing wasn't the correct way. And the original site that the video was on, they asked to take it down because it was a pretty bad example. And after that went viral. Now, that could have been, just an urban legend that I was hearing about this, but that was actually the story I heard about it when it was first released.
Oh, man. We've all met tower climbers who have been very rogue in their methods.
Well, I did actually see somebody just mention there on the in the IRC room that OSHA did say that was okay. So I may have heard that wrong.
Well, OSHA may have said it's okay, but why in God's name would you do it? Thankfully, the wind
was
wasn't blowing.
Crazy.
Wow. Oh, here we go. And they've got it. Here's part of the video. I mean, I get dizzy just watching this thing. I really do. Yeah,
but this part here, if you're doing free climbing on the ladder, I'd say, okay, I've done that. You could probably get away with it. It's when it gets up to the monopole where you got the tent peg, you know, the tent peg ladder. That part is like, wait a minute, now you got no real balance.
And then he goes up to the beacon and he stands on the plate on top and then finally decides to hook himself in. It's like, oh, Lord.
Yeah,
not my idea of a good time. And here's the tool bag.
The tool bag is the guy climbing behind him, I think.
I put an FM on in Connecticut many, many years ago, and the antenna was on a 1,300-foot television tower, which had an elevator in it. So we had a panel antenna at the 850-foot level, and the guy from the tower, from the antenna manufacturer, I won't mention who, came out. And he and I went up in the elevator, and there was a landing platform behind the antenna, and being a panel, you couldn't fall out of the tower. Here's the section that that Chris Tobin was referring to with the pegs. Man,
I mean, look
man.
At that. Would you feel comfortable even at, say, 300 feet doing that?
I wouldn't feel comfortable 20 feet doing that.
That's true. But, yeah, I've gone about 300-something feet, you know, I've done in the past. And I'll tell you, man, you get to 150 feet, you're already starting to question what you're doing.
They're a special breed, that's for sure. But now this tower in Connecticut, so we go up, we get out, there's a landing platform. I got out, I had a camera, I took some pictures. Okay, fine, all said and done. I got back in the elevator, and I turn around when I get in the elevator and look, and there's the guy from the tower company with no climbing belt, no nothing. He's climbed over the panel, and he's on the element outside the tower, jumping on the element. And I just kind of looked at him, and I said, how do you know they bolted that in properly? He says, no one ever fell off a tower because they didn't hang on. Yeah, how about because they couldn't?
Oh, my goodness.
But hey, here he goes. This is almost the monopole. Or is this the monopole?
This is at the point where the transmission line takes a bend for expansion purposes, I think they claim. They call it the tunic cage.
Yeah. He's almost to the top at this point. You can see the static dissipators up there.
That's right. The monopole is the antenna. That's what it is on this video.
Yeah, it's a pylon.
But I'll send the information over to Kirk when he posts this because if you haven't seen this video, I mean, this is
you have to watch it.
Hey, and what they did was, you know, they outfitted the guy's helmet with a camera, and that's what you're seeing. He's got the camera on top of his head, and you're seeing it from his eye view.
And there's also a storm rolling in. If you notice near the end of the video, there's, I think, a lightning flash or a sound of thunder.
Yeah, so, not my idea of a good time there either.
Yeah, I'd like to be on a 1,700-foot lightning rod during a storm. Why not? Feet to the top.
Yeah, well, cats down there would get it. Never mind.
this is where I had the issues. It doesn't look like he's clipped anything as he's getting up to this top part. And I don't think that would be a violation.
That's just wrong. That sets a bad example for the young folk who are looking to get into this field.
You know, you couldn't pay me enough. You really couldn't.
Yeah, that's and just.
He's approaching the top of the pylon there, and there's a strobe light beacon on top. And then he stands. He just gets up and stands on the platform up there. And then finally, when his partner comes up, he finally decides it's time to hook in. Yep, there we go. Well, almost there. Now we're at the midsection of the antenna.
Jeez. You can see the cloud formation in the foreground there. It's just amazing.
It's you know, our tower guys that we use Northeast Towers out of Connecticut at WOR, and they've showed me pictures that they've taken from the tops of 2,000-foot towers, and it's like, God bless you guys. Not me.
Oh yeah.
Like I said, 25. I have a problem getting on the roof of my house. Never mind. Wow.
Never look down. Never look down.
No.
I'm wow. getting that the thought of the movie High Anxiety, I think, is coming to mind.
Where's Mel Brooks when you need him?
I don't know what state he's in, but I can swear I can see my house from there.
Okay, I tell you.
At some point in the video, they talk about the distance to the horizon is something like 55 miles. So it makes you wonder.
Here he comes. He's coming up to the top here, and there you see the strobe light beacon, which either is burned out or appears to be off. I'm not quite sure which, because it's not flashing, and they normally flash during the day at a higher intensity. So you can
see. Which is probably good that he's not looking right at it then when it's doing that. He comes down, his face is sunburned from the flashing from the strobe.
You know, don't laugh. We had a presentation at SBE 15 once. They had they brought in one of those LED beacons. And of course, if you've ever looked
at
it, you have to be right on the beam. And one of our members just, it doesn't look that bright. And he put his face in it when the thing flashed and he was seeing green for the next 3 hours. It was great. But here we go. Here we go. Now watch this. Watch this guy. He's going to climb up and climb up onto that little tiny beacon plate. We're just going to put our hand on there and hold on to the pole on the other side. And here comes our partner from underneath. I don't get it. And now, let's see, is it now? No, in a minute, he'll decide to clip on. Here we go. No. I mean, the view is wonderful, but you know, I prefer to be enclosed.
Well, at least they're wearing helmets.
Yeah, that's going to do you when you hit the ground.
Well, you know, you want to protect your head when you come flying down.
I want to be able to identify you.
Oh, Lord. Well, we know it's his helmet. Yeah. It's got to be him.
Yeah. You know, tower climbing, I have to say, is not something you take lightly. And, you know, if you get a reputable company that does right by you, their fees are most likely well within line, aligned with what should be the case. I used to use a couple of companies in Connecticut, the one you use, Tom, and I've used others around the New York City area. And you know what? $1,000 for the day to climb a 500-foot tower, that's fine with me. You know, go do your thing. Get my job done. Pull up that inch 5/8.
I'll just stand here and watch. It's nice and safe. Yeah, you know, no problem. No issue at all.
After I was on a tower for a bit, after I was on a tower pulling up heliacs at about 170 feet, you would learn to appreciate those who do it for a living.
Oh, you bet. You bet. Said. Oh, man.
Yeah, you know, I don't even change my own oil, okay? I am not going on the tower to do the light bulbs.
Oh, come on, Chris. Have fun. Oh, man. Hey, the other thing I wanted to mention, saw an article last week, or a small article. Apparently, Frank Foti was talking about stereo generators. And as those who know, the way FM stereo is generated, we generate actually a mono signal first. So that's the left plus right signal that goes from 0 to 15 kilohertz. There's the 19 kilohertz pilot. And then from about 23 kilohertz to 53 kilohertz, there's a double sideband suppressed carrier signal that has the left minus right. And Frank said, well, why do we need the upper sideband? Why don't we just use the lower sideband, do a single sideband suppressed carrier signal, and, you know, that gives you more room for subcarriers. Just any thoughts, guys? I think it'd be interesting to try it with some of the radios out there and see which of those sidebands those radios actually grab.
That would be interesting. And when you know, it's funny, when you're talking about the upper and lower sidebands, the transmission part's easy. You want to eliminate the sideband, so be it. It's the decoding side. How does the decoder work in an environment that's got multipath, noise, and everything else? You're right, Tom. It'd be interesting to see how it tries to pull it in and what it does with it. Because, you know, the upper and lower sidebands with the phase relationships you have to worry about and the multipath, I'd be curious. It'd be fun, actually. But then adding more energy into that area, I'm not sure if... you know what? We're at the mercy of the radio manufacturers, whether it's in a car, at home, or portables.
Yeah, but then again, with the FM stereo signal, you've got the 19 kilohertz pilot, and that's the actual reference for the reinsertion of the carrier in the single sideband or double sideband suppressed carrier system. So, yeah, it's probably a concern, but I don't know. It'd be interesting to see how it works, because my guess is that the radio only takes one of those sidebands. Chris Tarr?
Yeah, yeah.
No, I agree. I think that the other side of that is, you know, if you're not using a modern processor, the pilot is 19 kilohertz or so. So I mean, you know, there's that relationship there.
Or so.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, the question is, can it get me more loudness? Because if it can, we're doing it. If it doesn't, I won't be able to justify the trouble.
If you could just replace the stereo pilot with a square wave generator, then we'd be all set.
Oh,
you
yeah.
don't do that?
Well, I can't see what I do, but
or maybe a second clipper. If you can get the first composite clipper to feed the second composite clipper, then you're in good shape then.
Hey, so what you're saying is you want your modulation monitor to be sitting there and look like if somebody tied a battery across the meter. I got it. That's all.
Well, I thought that's what we do now. Oh, I'm sorry, that's the wrong market.
I love it. Anyway, our topic tonight will be war stories. And what I'll do is I think, why don't we throw it up to Chris Tarr up in Wisconsin and say, Chris, got a story for us?
I do, actually. I may have told this before, I don't recall. But I was having a problem with my AM array, my directional array. Common point looked okay, but the antenna monitor was showing that it was way off. So obviously, before I went cranking knobs, I grabbed the field intensity meter, went out and did monitor points to kind of verify that. For those uninitiated with AM directional monitors, a field intensity meter is just a really sensitive, almost just basically a sensitive AM radio that can tell you the field strength of the AM signal. And what you do with a directional array is you have certain points that you go to as a reference, geographical points. And you take the measurement of the field strength of the radio station. And what that is over time, that becomes a reference, and you can tell if your signal is going in the right places and not going in the right places. So anyway, so I went and checked these points, and they all were in, and everything was fine. So that told me that, you know, there's really nothing wrong with the directional array, but the meters were telling me something wrong. So there was something wrong with the meters. Well, the way these meters work is there's these sample loops that are on the side of the tower that are essentially just pickup antennas. And they measure relative strength and phase of the signal and everything off of the tower. So obviously one of those was not functioning correctly. I swept the lines were clean, there was nothing wrong. It just wasn't working right. And it would be kind of intermittent and things like that. So I sent the climber up, speaking of tower climbers, and he went up to the sample loop, and it had one of those old, the connector is one of those old, almost spark plug looking guys, has the connector on the bottom and then runs through the loop. And then has an insulator and then a strap that goes from the top of the insulator over to the loop.
Oh, yeah.
So okay. The tower climber runs up there and all of a sudden I hear, got it. And the whole connector just fell out of the bottom. So what was going on was the connector was just barely there. And the insulator was cracked. And I guess he touched it and the whole thing just fell apart. And he's like, I think I got your problem. So we ended up. You know, having to and the you know you can't really find those anymore. That's a real old system for or an old design for those loops. So we were able to repair the insulator, but we had to fashion a new connector and a new strap and do all these things kind of on the fly, and put it all back together to work great. But just you know, it's one of those things where you know if you don't know any better, first thing you do is start cranking on the phasers because everything's out. And, you know, you start cranking knobs and try to, you know, make everything work. And fortunately, I've been around that block a few times and went, oh, wait a minute. I want to make sure we're actually having some problems here before we start cranking. But, you know, in the end, it all worked out. But that's a case where, you know, I had to, you know, just realize that I couldn't trust what I was seeing. You know, couldn't trust what the equipment was telling me.
Yeah, I think we've all been there. I've been there recently with WOR. Chris Tobin, how about you?
Oh, I have a good one. Doing consulting work some years ago for a radio station, and got a phone call. The previous engineer, they had the contract engineer, not sure the history of why he left, what was going on, but had many things in place for monitoring the station's parameters. It's an FM station, from power all through the remote control, and they would log it, you know, very judiciously, make sure everything was logged and everything was recorded for FCC purposes and just for general engineering practice. At least that's what I was told. So one day I got a phone call Saturday morning, and they're telling me we're off frequency. I was like, really? How do you know this? The remote control, there's a setting, there's a position that says the frequency reading. We take it every day, and we're off frequency. Okay, what does it read? Now, the licensed frequency is 107.1. They're telling me the frequency they're reading is now at 106.1 or 105.9 and slowly changing. It's like, okay, do me a favor. Turn on the mod monitor. What do you hear? The radio station. Does it sound clean? Is it in stereo? Everything look like it should be? Or sound like it should be? Yeah. All right, I don't think we're off frequency, but I'll take a listen. Everything's fine. So I call him back. You're fine. You're not off frequency. Don't worry about it. No, you don't understand. We got to make this. This has to be. I get a phone call from the program director screaming. Got to get the transmitter. I get a call from the general manager. Got to get the. We can't have this. If the FCC finds out, we will get. I said, guys, are you hearing it on frequency in the cars, the tabletop radios? Yes. Then you're fine. No, you don't understand. The remote control doesn't lie. Okay, the remote control right. doesn't lie. All right. HAL 9000, here I come. So I drive out to the transmitter site, which is up on a hill, on a sandbar, all the way out at the end of, in this case, it's Long Island. And, you know, you got to take a 4x4 to get to this place. I get up there, search out this frequency measurement device. I'm looking. I can't find it. It's like, okay, this is going to be fun. Lo and behold, the frequency measuring device, and please, you know, consulting engineers and contractors, please don't do this. This is not something for professionals, maybe for amateurs, but not professionals. It was a AA battery tied across it. Yeah. And it was wrapped up really nice in a box and grommet for the wires coming out. And, you know, it was labeled frequency mon. I was like, wow, what device is this sniffing out the signal? It's an aluminum box, by the way. It's a Bud box that's aluminum. I'm like, all right, maybe the case is the antenna. This doesn't make any sense. And I open it up, and it's electrical tape wrapped up about a half inch thick around a AA battery. So I guess if you open it up, you'd look at it like, ooh, it's a special thing. Yeah.
So what you're saying is the frequency of AA batteries.
I would have just taken a 1.5 volt wall wart and just replaced the battery with it and go, fixed! Great!
Yeah.
You'll never have the problem again. You will always be on frequency.
So what you're saying is the frequency of
I didn't have the heart to tell them that this was a battery, because then they probably would have gone after my predecessor, the previous contract guy. Who knows what the reasons, the conditions he was under, why he did it. I'm sure they're probably really funny. So I just simply said, problem's been resolved. Matter of fact, I found a rule in the FCC book that says we don't have to measure frequency anymore in this manner. Sent it to them. Copy the letter. Called up the FCC inspector in New York, who I happen to know. And I said, dude, can you do me a favor and just clarify some stuff? Give me some guidance on this. Tells me what, yeah, goes, no problem. Don't need to worry about it. Wrote to the GM, copied everybody. I said, guys, you're in great shape. Never worry about it again. Just stick to these parameters and I'll do the monthly check and you'll be in great shape. And
hey, Chris, what brand battery was that?
That battery was a EverReady. The Cat 9. It was a carbon battery.
Okay. So did you think to try a Rayovac to see what the frequency of it was?
I gave that some thought. Trust me. When I got down off that hill and got back home, and a couple of buddies out there in the market called me up and said, "Hey, did you take care of that problem?" I said, "Yeah, let's get together for some drinks and dinner, and let's have a good laugh."
Love it.
Yeah. So my guess is that using a carbon battery ensured that you got a monthly visit to check on the frequency. Had it been alkaline or lithium, probably have to wait a few months before it starts to drift.
Well, you know, we all like to get paid, right?
Oh, yeah, I thought, man, that was a good one. That was still the best one yet. There's a few others, but that was a good
one. Nothing like job security. Well, the story I have, how many of us have worked for a station that had the processing of the day club?
Oh, yeah.
They still do.
Well, this one station I worked for, it was we were at one position on the dial, and the next station over was our competitor. And many, many times we had a situation where we were playing the same song almost, you know, within a couple seconds of each other. Matter of fact, the jocks every now and then would, on the tuner in the studio, would punch up the competition to be the same song, and they'd kind of forget, and all of a sudden we'd end up off the air because their song ran out. We sounded really good. I mean, we sounded really good, and I just kind of got tired of hearing, oh, we got to adjust it to the competition because they sounded horrendous. So what I started doing was I went in, and I took a patch cord and popped it in the patch bay and just monitored it because, you know, those were the days before you had, when you had separate left and right controls, not ganged like on some of the processors today. And I just monitored it and left it there. And when I pulled the patch cord, all of a sudden I noticed, monitoring the competition, they started changing their processing. So whenever the PD would come in, I'd just throw the patch cord in and, 20 minutes later, go pull it out and listen to them play with their processing and take 2 days to get back to where it was. So the PD came in one day and, after about a month or so of this, he says, we got to do this, we got to do that with the processing. I said, come here, I want to show you how I adjust it. So we walked into the shop and I popped the patch cord in. He says, what'd you do? I monoed it. You monoed it. I said, well, how do you expect to adjust it if we mono it? I said, now we're going to walk out of the room. He said, but you didn't do anything. Precisely. I said, meet me back here in 20 minutes. So he came back 20 minutes later. And I said, now I want you to see something. I punched up the competition. I said, observe them, right? He said, yeah. I said, okay. Pop the patch cord out. Within, I'm going to say, 60 seconds, you started seeing the left channel come up, the right channel come up on them, the modulation level shift. You're listening to it, you'd hear the high end come up and distort, go down. You'd hear the low end come up and distort. And he's like, what are they doing? I said, they're trying to adjust their processing to match what I did. He says, but you didn't do anything. I said, light bulb time. And from that point on, I never heard, let's adjust the processing again. What I heard was, can I go put the patch cord in?
That reminds me of a guy. We had a morning show guy who, like a lot of morning show guys, a little full of himself, liked to hear himself talk. And he kept talking about how his mic didn't have enough bass and, you know, this and that. Just always complaining about the bass, you know, just this magical bass that apparently I couldn't figure out. So one day I put in a box with a knob in it. Didn't connect it to anything, but a box with a knob. Set it next to the console, and I said, here's your bass control. If you feel like you need a little more bass, crank it up. And he started talking, and he cranked it up. And he's like, my God, it sounds great. I don't know what that box does, but, man, all of a sudden I've got all the bass in the world, and it sounds wonderful. I'm just thinking to myself, it's just a knob that's not connected to anything. It's the placebo effect. Couldn't believe it. He was all excited about how great the bass sounded. And, by adjusting this bass knob and, reminded me of really, truly who the knob was in this situation. Wasn't the thing in the box.
I love it. Chris Tobin, your turn.
Oh, yeah. I have several. But, I had one processing war. I made presets on one of my processors so that they were different EQ curves, compression ratios, the whole bit. And then when the folks in programming would say, we need to be louder, the songs are fading too easily, the crossfade, whatever it is, it's not what it should be, the guys across town are beating our pants. So I'd look at the Arbitrons and go, well, looking at the time spent listening, the cume, and the overall numbers, I said, we're actually doing better than they are. So why are we even concerned? No, you don't understand. People in their cars, they can hear the difference. It will lose the numbers. We'll be eroded the numbers. I'm like, okay, but I'm just checking because so far it looks like we're about several points ahead and we're averaging much better than they are. So, all right, fine. Hit a preset. I said, all right, this is the experimental preset. Tell me what you want. Go for it. Have fun, and we'll see how things go. And they're playing with it back and forth, the whole bit. Now we can't make it work right. You need to do it because you seem to have it right. Okay. I go back to my other preset. Don't tell them. I just say, okay, we'll go back to the preset, see what this does. What do you think? It's much better. That sounds great. Let me go down to the car. They go down to the car. They call me up. All right, we're driving around. Sounds great. Just need a little more bass. Okay, a little more bass. How's that? Yep, good. Once again, no settings changed except we went back to the original. The original settings, what we started off with, got us the numbers we had. We were actually competing and beating the competition. with the processing we had set up and agreed upon. And I just went to a preset that definitely sounded different. I mean, you could hear it. And I just, okay, try this. Went back to the original. They were happy. The next book came out, and we were on top, still on top. And we were by 3.5 share points ahead. So I figured, you know what? Did my part, generating revenue, ratings are in, and I don't have to worry about the processing.
I love it.
Yes. Well, some of the guys get a little too crazy. They get too crazy.
When I worked in another market, we had a we were in an office building, though this one station I was at, and the STL transmitters and the processor, but the STL transmitters were up on the roof of the building. Not the roof; they were up in the penthouse. And, the antennas were out on the roof, and this was a kind of a weird building. The roof was flat, and, I mean, there was nothing between you and the street except there. I mean, you could walk right over to the edge and look right over, and it was like, yeah, thank you very much. But there was a television station in town, and they needed a place for their STL. Well, this rack appeared one day, and these 18 gigahertz dishes appeared on the roof, and well, that was their STL. Okay, great, fine, not a problem, because they, from their studio, they couldn't see the transmitter site. And I knew it was up there, not a problem. So I went up one day to do a routine check, and when I went up and walked in, the lights were on, which was kind of unusual in the penthouse there. I mean, because the building was always screaming if somebody left the lights on. So I went up, I did my thing, I did my checks, I walked down on the roof, looked at the antenna, waved at the edge, said, I'm not going near you, because it's like that tower climbing video, I get dizzy, and walked back in, everything was good, I shut the lights off, and I walked out and went back down. About an hour and a half later, here comes the building chief engineer, followed by the chief engineer of the TV station. They come storming into my office. Were you upstairs? Yeah, I went up, every week I go up and check the processing and check the STL transmitters. Why? Did you shut the lights off? Yeah. You guys are always yelling, turn the lights off. Did you know that they were plugged into the circuit with the light switches? Where did it say that, and where did it say not to shut the lights off? I took the TV station off the air by accident because I shut the lights off.
You're the tax man. You shut the lights off, that's it. Lock the doors, go home.
What do you mean I took the station off the air? I'm standing, sitting there going... What do you mean you plugged it into a circuit that wasn't marked? I couldn't believe it. But lesson learned, always mark the switches if you're plugged into something. That's what you should do.
True.
So Chris Starr, how about you?
Well, let's see. I had a situation, transmitter site I used to have in Joliet. It's actually long gone now. We replaced it shortly before I left there. But it was the original radio studio built in the 30s. It was across the street from a hospital. And it was in kind of a seedy part of town, not the greatest place in the world. And I was here 3 a.m. And fortunately, I had a couple of guys with me. We were doing some work at the transmitter site, and the studios used to be there. So, there's the station call letters on the outside of the building. So we're in there working, and this drunk woman stumbles in and is just like walking around, y'all, hello. And can we help you? I want you guys to play some Pearl Jam for me. Can you play some Pearl Jam? And just stumbling around and pushing things over. And finally, the two guys that were with me, big guys, walked up and said, well, the good news and the bad news is, we can't play Pearl Jam. The good news is we can show you how to get out of the building. And they picked her up and carried her out the door. And she stood there for an hour yelling outside the door, I hear Pearl Jam! And we finally ended up calling the police to come and get her off the property. But it just, it was very surreal. At that moment, I was really, really questioning my choice of careers. Is this really how this is going to play out the rest of my life? I'm going to be, these seedy places at 3 a.m. with drunk women coming in wanting Pearl Jam. Is this really how this is going to end? So, eventually, we built a better facility somewhere. And but this is the same place, different story, same place. During the day, I was at the same transmitter site doing some work, and I get a knock on the door, And there's a woman standing there. I said, can I help you? She goes, you got to hide me. I said, excuse me? Well, they're coming to get me. I went, oh, hey, who's coming to get you? The guys, they're coming to get me. I you got a problem, I guess, huh? Well, you got to hide me. And I just like, sorry, you know, they know how to get in here. I can't hide you. They know where this place is at. And she said, no, you've got to. And then she stops kind of mid-sentence. And she goes, hey, can I, do you have a bathroom? I really have to go to the bathroom. And she goes, I just got out of the hospital from across the street. And they're coming to. And I saw this as my opportunity. Absolutely, we have a bathroom right in the back there. So she goes in, closes the door to the bathroom. I hit 911, call the police. They come out. And they got her. So there you go.
And let me guess what ward she walked out of.
Yeah, oh, I can just imagine the ward that she just walked out of. Absolutely.
Oh, that's funny. Oh, Lord. It's just, sometimes your listeners can be such a joy. But Chris Tobin, your turn.
Obviously, the one I have, which I always fondly tell friends of mine, and when I go to the local schools to talk for you know, a job day or career day, whatever you want to call it these times, is the transmitter site I was working at, AM/FM combo. It was on a town property, you know, a public government property, and yeah, we were there for some 45 years and had a 99-year lease. So one night working, doing transmitter work, had some issues. All of a sudden, the lights go out, and then generator kicks on, and I'm like, oh, great, you know, utility failure, whatever. Not aware of any storms. Go outside, blue sky, you know, I'm sorry, clear sky night, stars abundant, everything is great. So I'm like, what's going on? And I hear this sound off into the distance near the edge of the property, which is about, you know, 6-7 acres away. Fireballs. If you could picture fireballs like a Roman candle shooting up on the horizon above the tree line. I was like, that can't be good. The utility pole went down, transformer shorted out, and apparently continued to be energized and was showing off its location. That's the fun part, you know, watching the spectacular fireworks display, if you will. That was great. The part that caused it was an escaped felon, someone who robbed a local grocery store, driving down the road, lost control over the hill, and slammed into three utility poles, taking them all down, who then left his vehicle and scurried into the forest, which is adjacent to our property at the transmitter site. Unbeknownst to me, several dozen law enforcement folks are, you know, scouring the countryside, if you will, as I'm in this little brick house with one little light lit up and doing my thing, pounding on the door. I hear, I'm like, what the heck? It's 3 o'clock in the morning. There's nobody out here. We're off the beaten path. And besides, I'm behind two sets of gates that require combos, and only a government or city employee would be accessing it. And we know there's nobody there at that hour. So I look through the peephole, and I see a guy. I'm like, that doesn't look right. You know, pop it open. Can I help you, officer? He goes, sir, step away from the door. I'm like, yeah, but can I help? They push me aside, race into the building. I'm put up against the wall, spread eagle. I'm like, what the devil? And they come out, who are you and what are you doing here? And I was like, I am employed by the radio station. I work here and I'm performing some FCC measurements that are government-related requirements that I need to do this month. What are you doing here? And why are you bothering me? Is this a practice? He goes, no, we can't tell you. You just have to stay in the building, lock the door. This police officer and two others will stay here until it's safe. I said, safe for what? Should I just leave? No, you can't leave. I said, so what should I prepare for? Is it a propane leak, chlorine gas? Is there an earthquake pending? What exactly? Sir, I can't explain to you. I'm not at liberty to discuss the details. You must stay in the building. Okay, I'm on generator. I need to go out and check on the generator. You can't. I was like, you don't understand. Going through this back and forth, and finally, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to call the precinct commander, who I know, and say, what the devil? Yeah, the guy, armed robbery of a grocery store, hurt two people, you know, shots fired, drew blood, ran the car into a pole, almost hit somebody else, scurried into the forest, into the, you know, the trees, shot back at the law enforcement folks, and apparently was hiding somewhere just behind my building.
Oh, good.
I mean, you know, like, wow, okay, I can't leave. Can't do anything, and they won't tell me what's going on. I'm sitting there going, this can't be good because the guy's got large rifle, you know, not AK-47s, but the MP5s. MP5s, full tactical gear, helmets, and people tramping through the bushes. I mean, it was like a scene of a movie. I was like, great. Needless to say, I got to work late the next morning, very late, and the general manager wanted to know why was the police department coming by the station.
CSI Chris Tobin.
Yeah. It was like, it was just, you know, three guys in suits flashing badges asking for the chief engineer, and the general manager says, is there anything I can do for you? And they said, no, there's nothing. We don't have business with you. We have business with the chief engineer of the radio station. Would you please find him? That's how they said it.
I love it. Chris, like, what did you do like, now?
Yeah, it was great. Well, of course, you know, it helps when you have friends in the police department who know they're going to have some fun at your expense. And that's one of the guys. You know? Well, hey, you know, those of us in the New York market, New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, remember a retired FCC inspector. His name was Judd Mansbeck. Judd would play those games with people. He would go into a radio station, identify himself as an FCC inspector. I'm here to conduct an inspection. I need to speak to your chief operator. And then if he could see that they were fumbling, he would go the next step, okay? Mm-hmm. Knowing that he's just having fun, he's not going to go crazy. But you know what? If you didn't know that, you didn't know that of him, you'd sit there as a general manager, maybe program director, sales manager, going, oh my goodness, the feds are in the lobby, and I'm screwed. That's basically what comes down. So, yeah, so if you have friends in law enforcement at your local radio station, take good care of them because be prepared. You will probably get pranked at some point. But, yeah, they caught the felon, took care of everything. But, boy, I'll tell you, I was wide awake that morning, that night.
Oh, I bet. That sounds like a story somebody told me the other day. He was working at a foreign language station at one point, and he wasn't there. He went out for lunch or something, and the FCC decided to come in for a visit. And his cell phone rang, and he picks it up. He, hello, you know, what's up? Federales! He showed back up at the radio station. He says everybody in the place was running out the back door. It was just the FCC there to inspect. I mean, can you imagine? But no, Chris mentioned before the people who showed up at his radio station, and one station I worked at, we had a guy who would show up at remotes. I'm not going to say which station it was, but his name was Henry. And he was, I can put it politically correctly, but you know, he was slightly retarded. Nice guy, great kid. But he, swear to God, that he must have had half a dozen brothers, because we could have a remote on the AM and a remote on the FM, and he would show up at both. And they could be within a half hour each other across the state. He would show up at both, and it'd be like, how'd you get here? But the weirdest thing, you know, he'd show up, and he'd help hand out T-shirts or whatever. He just liked the radio station and would show up. So we had a broadcast one day up at it was the equivalent of a state fair. And we went up there, and we had to get up there early because it was the morning show, and they opened up at 9 o'clock, and the morning show was off at 10, but they wanted to make sure that our people were there that particular day. So we show up at the building we're in, and there was a nice porch up near the top. And we went out on the porch. It was a beautiful morning, and we're doing the show outside. And, you know, it's 5 o'clock in the morning. We're doing our thing. Now, there's me, the morning man, the sports guy, the weather guy, and the security guard. And we all walked in, and he chained the doors. So we're up there, we're doing the show, and we hit the, you know, we throw it back to the radio station for the top hour newscast. We hit the station ID. Everybody pulls off their headphones. We turn around, and standing behind the security guard is Henry. And we all get this look on her face. It's, you know, this incredulous look. And the security guard sees him standing there and comes, he says to me, he said, did you let him in? I said, you chained it. You chained the door, and you have the keys. So, you know, he and I went down and checked, and everything was chained tight. We don't know where he came from or how he got 35 miles from his home base at 5 o'clock in the morning in a different state. He just showed up. I just, we couldn't explain it. But like I said, he was a great guy. But another story I have, and maybe you've encountered this too. One station I was at, we had a woman, she did middays, and she was very, very pregnant at this point. And the way the studio was set, when you walked into the studio, it was one side of the U for the furniture, and the console was up over here. So you had to walk around the U to get to the console. Well, she had, during a song, she walked out, she got a cup of hot chocolate, and she came in and she walked around the U, and, well, she was front heavy, and she tripped. And when she tripped, the cup went flying. Now, I'm going to say from the point where that cup went flying was a good 10 feet across the room. And where did the cup come down? Dead center, upside down on the Pacific Recorder's console. And she comes. My office was outside the operations area. She comes in. Oh, my God. My assistant and I are sitting there. He grabbed contact cleaner. I grabbed couple of Allen wrenches. We ran into the studio and started, okay, this cart machine's on the air. We're going to keep these on. So we pulled all the modules on this side and just flooded the motherboard with contact cleaner. Got all those modules back in, moved the carts to the other side, pulled all the modules over here, flooded it with contact cleaner, cleaned it out. We actually kept it on the air and saved the console, though for about 2 hours after that, the speakers would sometimes not come out of mute, and then everything calmed down and it was fine. But who would have thought that you would walk in the studio, have an oopsie, and 10 feet away from the console, and the cup would go like this and go right down dead center, upside down in the middle of the console. It was unbelievable. Right between carts 3 and 4 on the board.
Of course it would land face down right in the middle. That's how Murphy works.
Oh, she felt so bad. It's like, hey, look, it's not like you did it on purpose. I mean, good Lord.
I was thinking about Chris Tobin's story about the felon and the law enforcement and things like that. I had to do some radials for an AM. This is where if you're checking, maybe doing a proof of performance for an AM station, a lot of times you'll take a line from where the transmitter is and go way out, and you'll stop along points on this line and take measurements. Well, it was me and my assistant, and we're in my minivan. And this line goes through a very, very bad part of town in Milwaukee. And, you know, so we're trying to figure out how we're going to approach this. And it turns out by the time we got, you know, into more and more into this just crime-ridden, you know, houses are boarded up stuff, you know. Now, in order to take these readings, you would have to stop, park the car, generally leave it running, get out, put the meter up, move it around, take these measurements. You know, you're standing out in the middle of the road, for several minutes, you know, and I'm, you know, dressed in my normal clothes, but, you know, shiny minivan stuff in a very high crime area. So we ended up coming up with a plan B because we were not going to do that. So we ended up, my assistant had the window rolled down in the van, and I'm rolling like at 5 miles an hour, and he's leaning out the window with the meter up in the air, taking the readings as we're rolling down the street going, okay, it looks like it's going to be about, as he's moving this thing around. And I just kept moving and moving and moving. And, went through that entire neighborhood just kind of, you know, people were staring at us and wondering, you know, yelling at us and stuff. And it was like, okay, here we go. And then he'd close it and he'd roll up the window and I'd, you know, move forward again. So it was one of those things probably don't want to have to deal with again. Now, you know, fortunately, those neighborhoods are much better now, but several years ago, that wasn't the case.
Oh, man. Chris Tobin?
Well, let's see. Keeping on the theme of law enforcement and troublemakers, one station I worked at, we had to go out to their site. It was located in downtown in the city, in the downtown section of the city, which was also a very, very bad neighborhood, part industrial, part residential, very run down. So, The engineer and myself, I was working as their part-time contract guy. So we're driving down to 1 a.m., coming down, we're going to take the station off the air, do some maintenance and fix some problems. And as we're driving off the ramp of the expressway, if you could picture coming off an expressway ramp, and you go down at the base, and you make a right turn, get onto a local street. As we turn onto the local street, we see what looks like flashes of light, probably 500 yards out, you know, in front of us. People running across the street, perpendicular to us, and then three cars spinning in 360 circles coming down at toward us on the street. We're like, wow, this can't be good because our transmitter site is just beyond where they are. So we turn around, get out of the intersection, and make our way toward, I think it was at the time, Mr. Donut, donut shop, coffee shop. And we're stopped by a police officer, jumps out in front of the vehicle. I'm like, whoa, now what? He asks us two things. He goes, one, are you gentlemen lost? And two, if you're not, what the devil, I won't say what he said, are you doing in this neighborhood? As you can imagine, we're probably the wrong, ethnicity for the neighborhood. If we told him who we are, we showed our identification, the whole bit. He's like, oh, yeah, you guys, that's that building over there. Yeah, we know about you. Tell you what, go yourself coffee, something to eat. He goes to this, he goes, give us about an hour. We'll have the drug dealers out of the neighborhood. You should be fine. The ATF guys will be done up in about a half hour. And we're like, ATF? Okay, is that who we saw? He goes, yeah, they got a little crazy. Somebody took a pot shot at a Fed. Oh, okay. Yeah, we'll go get some sleep. You think an hour and a half maybe? He's like, no, don't worry about it. An hour, we'll be fine. Trust me, we already got half of them in the van. We're fine. Come back now. Matter of fact, just give a call to the precinct. I'll let them know that you're in the neighborhood. We'll have somebody come out and, keep an eye on you. So we got a police escort to the transmitter site later that morning, 2:30 in the morning. And now you try and focus on working on a tube transmitter, making measurements and doing stuff, knowing that you're in the heart of a major drug bust that just went down, and the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms division of the government just finished taking care of the neighborhood. Yeah, you're in a good mood. Yeah, that was one of the better ones. I'll never forget that. That was great.
you got nothing to worry about. Yeah.
Well, the real estate in that neighborhood was cheap, so they built the transmitter, the tower site. Everything was just ideal. Yeah, they just left out the part that you need to, come with a firearm and flak jacket and probably an escort, depending on the day of the week or the night.
Well, you get what you paid for. keeping along those lines, it wasn't a bad neighborhood, but at one point at WOR, I went out and do the monitor points one day. And on the old array, there was a point that was in the parking lot of this Chinese restaurant. And I had already measured we had four monitor points. I had already, is what he's trying to say, measured the other three. And I get out at the fourth, and it is, I mean, we're not talking at the limit. We're not talking slightly above the limit. We're talking it's sky high. And what the heck is going on? So that's when I looked around and noticed that there was a bridge that was covered over. Well, the state was working on the bridge. Okay, that made a lot of sense. Well, I went back, got the radial map, went out and drove the radial. When that happens, what you have to do is you have to go out and measure the radial and see if it averages out properly, which it did. Okay, well, it's the monitor point that's bad, and obviously they're going to be working on the bridge, so I need to come up with a temporary monitor point. So I kind of looked at the map and found a place and said, okay, let me see what this does. And I measured it, and I said, okay, I know if I do this on the phaser, this point will go in this, should go in this direction. Let's make sure it's not one of those points, because we get these in Manhattan, and Chris Tobin knows about places like this. There are places you can take a field strength meter in Manhattan. Doesn't matter what you do. You could probably shut the transmitter off, and you'll still measure signal there. It's just because of the way it is. And it's unbelievable. There was one place in Manhattan I did a measurement, honest to God, no matter which way you turn that meter, it sat there at the same reading. It didn't budge. So I went back to the transmitter site, made an adjustment, came back to the point and did a measurement, and okay, it did exactly what I thought it would do. So I went back, adjusted it, and came back to read it again. And it's kind of a narrow street. There's a house on either side of the street, and I'm dead center in the middle of the street. Guy comes out of the house. He's, what are you doing? So with WR radio, I'm doing a measurement of the antenna system. It's an FCC thing. He's, get the hell out of here. Excuse me, I'm on a public road. He's, get out of here, I'll call the cops. Said, knock yourself out. So he called the cops. I figured, okay, I'll hang around. Cop shows up, says, what are you doing? And I handed him my business card and told him what I was doing. He says, oh, yeah, you guys have John Gambling in the morning. I listen to Joan Hamburg. He says, what's the price? So the guy comes out of his house. He says, what's the problem? Guy says, he shouldn't be here. Cop says, it's a public road. He's not bothering you. And the guy starts arguing with the cop, and the cop looked at me, and I said, maybe he thinks I'm from the cable company and he's stealing cable. The guy turned white as a sheet, turned around, and disappeared in that house so fast we didn't even see the door close. Top looked at me. I said, now you should call the cable company.
That's good.
Chris Starr.
Well, this is this one is more of a I wouldn't say humorous war story, but a war story nonetheless, and just an interesting series of events when commissioning a transmitter. This was actually a month ago for WDRT in Viroqua, Wisconsin, community radio station down in the non-com band, and got a really nice brand new transmitter. And I was hired to come out and commission the transmitter, hook it all up, turn it on, get it tested, all that kind of stuff. So really, on the surface, I went, piece of cake. No problem. This should be, you know, I do this all the time. It was a, you know, it's a small solid-state transmitter. They had already actually taken it out of the box and mounted it, had it ready to go. The antenna was run. They just didn't make any of the connections or turn the transmitter on. Perfect. I'll be out there. Take me an hour tops. No problem. So I get out there and connect the transmitter to a dummy load, hadn't powered anything up yet, and got it all connected up. I said, okay, well, let's take the, you know, let's do the first test and see if we can get the transmitter to come on and make some power. Turn the transmitter on, nothing. It lights up, there's power. I hit the go button, nothing. So looking around, and I finally see in the fault logs that the power supply is, it says the power supply is not turned on. Ooh, looking around, it's power to it. So I take off the top cover. Sure enough, they have a switching supply that was jostled loose in transit that slipped out of its connector. Push that back in, and I look at the guy. I'm like, we're ready to go. Let's do this. You excited? You know, and get up front, turn it on. This time it turns on. It's like, great. Start ramping up the power. Gets up to about 150 watts. Gets up to about 150 watts. Gets up to about 150 watts. it won't go any higher. I'm like, okay, so what's going on? So I look at the reflected power, and the reflected power is all over the place. And I had it connected to a dummy load. I'm like, okay, this is really getting odd now. I mean, the transmitter's fine. So I turn it off, and I take my Wiltron Sightmaster, plug it in the dummy load, program in the frequency range. And now this is a brand new watt meter, brand new. Or not water, a brand new dummy load. So I hook up the analyzer, put in the, you know, their frequency and pretty much the FM band. And I looked, and the curve was like this. On the non-com part of the band, the rejection loss was just immense. And then it goes down completely flat at about 100 megahertz. It's like, okay, so it's like, I think we're just going to have to put it in the antenna to test it out. It's like, normally we wouldn't do that, but I think maybe in this case we're going to need to do that. So we take it all apart and we hook it all up. And, you know, long story short, we put it into the transmitter, turn it on, and it works great, and it's beautiful. But the end result is about 4 or 5 hours worth of work, where I'm coming in, oh, no problem, half an hour, we'll get this connected. It's no problem at all. And, 4 or 5 hours later, everything that possibly could have gone wrong with this thing went wrong. And I just was like, I am so sorry. I know better than to say, oh, yeah, no problem. It'll be an hour, because it never is. You know, there's always something. So we got over and over and over, and finally got this all set up and got them on the air, and it was wonderful. But it just goes to show you, all of this equipment was brand new and, you know, just recently put in. And, you know, the thing is that it's like you believe that, you know, that with all new equipment, there should be a piece of cake and everything's fine. But, you know, here you go, brand new dummy load, and from a major manufacturer, and it had a problem. The transmitter and shipping got damaged, and that was a problem. So all this brand new equipment that should have just went together and turned on, every single piece of it had a problem somewhere along the line that you had to troubleshoot. So it was just one of those things where it really makes you think, you know, when you're doing these projects, don't take that for granted, that while something's new, it should be working fine. You know, always remember that, you know, bring all of your equipment with you, all of your test gear, because you just never know what you're going to find.
Was it delivered by the Murphy Trucking Company?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm theorizing in my head, by the looks of it, that they were just driving down the road, they got to the address, and just pushed the box out of the side of the truck.
I love it. Well, we've got about 2-3 minutes left. Chris Tobin, you got a quick one for us?
Yeah, I got a quick one. New transmitter, brand new out of the box, so to speak, off the crate, the pallet. Install it, put it on the air. First week, it's going great. Sounds great. Everything's doing just like it should. Power. It's a 35 kilowatt transmitter running at about, unfortunately, we had it run at about 34 kilowatts. And everything's great. Second week of the operation, bam, gets knocked off the air. We're not sure what happened. Trip the breaker, plate breaker. Not a good sign. So do our troubleshooting. Can't find anything wrong. Reset the breaker. Let it run. Sure enough, 2 or 3 days go by. It's fine. Bam, trip the breaker. Next time we put a power meter on the three phases coming into the building, monitor it for a couple of days and notice the voltage is sagging up and down. And every so often we see a spike. Open up the transmitter, look inside, everything appears normal. So we start reading the schematic. Yeah, something you do quite often, you at least try to think you should. We look at the schematic and on the plate, the plate wire, you know, for the plate voltage, the power supply, there's no choke. No choke in line with the... So we're like, well, that's really weird. The choke is on the ground side of this power supply. Not sure why. So we call the manufacturer. Oh, yeah, it's fine. No, it's a new technique. It'll be fine. You don't have to worry about it. It's more efficient, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but the choke is there to protect the plate from various anomalies. And, you know, every other transmitter we've ever installed from other manufacturers, there's a plate choke in line. That's normal. No. So they, you know, the engineers I'm working with, like, well, we come up with this idea. Maybe what we can do is reduce the amount of circulating current in the cavity, and this way we can really keep the arcing that's occurring in the cavity from happening. But guys, the choke is there for a reason. We can't come up with a workaround. We really need no, can't do it. So somebody comes up with the idea of using a Pyrex glass jar, suspended from inside the RF cavity of a 35 kilowatt transmitter. Using, you know, nylon tie wraps. So if you, on this particular transmitter, the bellows, it's a compressible, you know, copper tube. It looks like the bellow, you know, like an accordion, you know, type material made of copper. So there we are suspending this tube inside this glass jar. And everyone's like, oh, it'll work great. Tune it up. Sure enough, things seem to be working just fine. 2 days, 3 days go by. We're all mystified, like, this is actually working? This can't be right. Yeah, we get knocked off the air, trip the breaker, open up the cavity. What do we see? A perfectly cut jar, as if a glass cutter took around the edge where the circulating currents at the base of the bellows appear. Maybe there was lead in the glass, who knows what. But the RF shattered the glass in a perfect cut, dropped the bottom half, and of course the surge tripped the breaker. Needless to say, shortly thereafter, talking with the manufacturer, a sudden service bulletin comes out for all of these model transmitters inserting a choke in the line with the plate voltage. So the plate wire. And I just sat there going, I have pictures somewhere of a Pyrex jar with little daisies on it hanging inside the bellow. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I forget to mention it was a colorful little jar? Yes. The reason we used Pyrex was because it was heat treated so we could support, you know, sustain heat. Yeah, the problem is RF heat is very different than thermal heat. So that's my war story. That's what I always cherish when I talk to transmitter manufacturers and they talk about strange RF cavity measurements and settings and, you know, adjust the cavity, the plates, and how you get everything to neutralize the tubes. I was like, yeah, do you ever use a Pyrex jar? They're like, what? So, yeah. That was a classic. That was a classic.
Real quick before we wrap up, I want to do my tip of the week this week because I just ran into this and really should have known better, and you know, but I didn't, and now I do, and I'm passing this along to anybody else in the engineering world. If you have a UPS that is connecting critical components, make sure you buy yourself a transfer switch so that if the UPS fails and takes out everything that's connected to it, it'll actually switch over to regular power and keep the equipment powered. That way you won't have a certain number one station in a market off the air for about 20 minutes because the battery backup died and took out the remote control and audio processor. And the engineer had to get in his car and drive to the transmitter site. So don't do what that idiot did. When you put in a UPS... get yourself a transfer switch because I know for a fact they're $322 at CDW and you can get them within a couple of days. Not that I...
yes,
know,
but see, you miss... You, but hey. The problem... See, there's no fault here. You were taking advantage of a revenue opportunity by not spending $322 you Put more money to the bottom line. You increase the P&L. Don't look at it in the negative. No, you did. You did exactly what was expected of you.
Now, granted, I saved him a lot of money on the original UPS. I can tell you that. So won't be happening again. But you know, it's fun, and it's funny because I hear those stories. And it, you know, it's ever happened to me. And I was like, yeah, you're right. You should do that. But, you know, I've always had good luck. So, I didn't really think of it until it happened to me. And then all of a sudden it was, I get it now. That will never happen again. So, be sure to, if you're hooking up critical components to UPS, that you buy yourself a transfer switch so that if the UPS decides to stop working, you've got some other power available right away.
Love it. I love it. Well, Chris, thank you for the lesson. And it looks like our time is up. We're actually a couple minutes over. I'd like to thank Chris Tobin for joining us this week. Chris?
Oh, my pleasure, as always. I enjoy it. I hope everybody else does. And thank you for the emails.
Yeah. I hope so, too. And Chris, where can we find you if we want to get in touch with you?
Just ctobin@cbs.com. It's on the website. That works best.
Okay, and Chris Tarr, thank you for the stories and giving us our lesson for the day.
No problem. I don't mind embarrassing myself a little bit if it's going to help everybody else.
And Chris, where can we find you?
You can check me out at thegeekjedi.com.
And I'm Tom Ray from WOR in New York, and you can find me at W2TRR.com. Best way to find me, actually, is Tom Ray. That's TOMRAY. It's all one word at WOR710.com. I thank you for joining us this week. We'll be back next week. Hopefully, Kirk will be back with us. He had a meeting he had to attend this evening, so he couldn't be with us. And I hope you enjoyed our stories, because we enjoy doing them for you. I'm Tom Ray. This is This Week in Radio Tech. Have a great week.
That's all the bandwidth we can pilfer this week. Another tort has propagated, and all the transmitters and audio equipment live happily ever after, thanks to the handsome engineer and his kind, benevolent care. We'll be back next week.
Lord willing, and the creek don't rise.
This Week in Radio Tech.
Subscribe to iTunes and you'll never miss a show.
Search for This Week in Radio Tech in the iTunes Store.
Soliciting is strictly encouraged.
If you like today's show, tell a friend. If you didn't like it, we were never here.
Kirk Harnack's wardrobe provided by the Salvation Army and the Red Cross Disaster Relief Services. Hair and makeup provided by Penny Lopez Garcia Hernandez Weinberg.
He's unique, wouldn't you say?
I just want to get it over with.
This ends this transmission.
Tango, Whiskey, India, Romeo, Tango.
Signing off. Okay.